What is going on? We are back. It is the Flagrant 2. I don't know why I said we're back. Like, we were out. Like, it hasn't been 6 months. I just missed you, Reno, with this long weekend.
Oh, Sweetie Pie. I missed you, too.
Sweetie Pie? It's getting weird. CJ McCollum is going to join us in about 15 or 20 minutes. The Trailblazer shooting guard. Super pumped, Reed. We give a lot of love to that organization because I think they've overachieved for where they are. You know, I don't know how much we've talked about this on the podcast, but good friend of mine worked in that organization, and especially when I was at FS1, you know how the weirdness of like transitioning from covering guys at a distance to becoming friends with guys that play or played, and you're sort of on the inside and it feels different, and you have like access to these guys and the trust. And one of the dorky questions I always ask is like, what's the least desirable city in the country to play in? And when I was first sort of transitioned to TV, right, and being social with guys at Hall of Famers, Journeyman, the whole thing, right, I expected, and no offense to these cities, my wife's from one of them, but like, I was expecting like Cleveland or Minneapolis, no offense, because it's cold, or, and the answer was unequivocally Portland. Unequivocally.
Why?
Portland. Not at all diverse. Lot of guys that played will tell you, despite its liberalism and is not welcoming to black men, and I'm not going to, I don't know, I'm not, if you're listening in Portland, you think that's wrong, I'm sorry, but I've heard it, and it's really far away. I mean, it's like, you know, obviously the furthest point from a lot of the venues, and it's a small market. And so I think Neil O'Shea, the GM, has done an amazing job drafting Lillard and drafting McCollum and putting together, and we'll ask CJ about this, the third best backcourt in the game. Anyway, really excited. CJ McCollum joins us. We'll try to get to some quick shots. They're not called duck shots. If you don't know what that is, it's because you're new to the podcast, and we welcome you, and we hope you will subscribe on iTunes. Rate and review favorably. Yes, to those of you that tweeted me at SportsWriter, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R, I know Reed is the better, more talented of the two of us. You don't have to tell me all the time. Reed's on there, no, too, Reed Forgrave.
Don't leave out much better looking and with a much better beard.
You do carry me, Reed, and I love you for that. I'm in a great mood. It's a Thanksgiving weekend.
Mood.
Can we hit a couple things before we get to CJ, before he calls in?
Let's do it. Let's make it quick. I'm pumped. I am pumped for this CJ McCollum interview. He's one of my favorite stories in the NBA. So
dude,
let's
I'm
do it, man.
Totally with you. LeBron James made some comments on Colin Kaepernick, said what I think, politics, whatever your politics are aside. People always get mad when you say Kaepernick is being blackballed. Conservatives do, or people that are on the other side of the spectrum than I am. But I'll say this, Reed. I don't think it's a gauntlet thrown to say that he's been blackballed. I think it's obvious. I think the real sort of difficult conversation is, should he be blackballed, right? Because if somebody did say something that is beyond American values, they should be blackballed. You and I both think he should be playing and think what he has done and what he has said and what he has begun actually is in its own sort of way patriotic. But that's beyond the point. People have wanted to avoid sort of answering whether he's being blackballed. Not LeBron. Somebody asked LeBron, credit them, and he said, of course he's being blackballed. We've seen what he's done. What's your general sort of takeaway of LeBron? Because I have one, but I want to hear your first.
Yeah, I mean, two thoughts here. One is LeBron is stating the absolute obvious. It doesn't mean that it isn't controversial and that plenty of people disagree with it because of their political views. But if we are taking political views out of it, this is the most obvious thing in the world. The fact that Nathan Peterman started an actual NFL football game this past weekend, I mean, that tells you all you need. Of course, Kaepernick is getting
five interceptions.
In six passes.
Six completions.
That's ridiculous.
14 attempts.
What's killing the NFL right now? I mean, there are a lot of things that are killing the NFL, and that's why I think the NBA is an ascendant league, and I think will surpass the NFL within the next 10 years
or so. I actually think that, too. I agree with
that. A big part of
it
is bad quarterback play, and Colin Kaepernick is an exciting quarterback. So I think LeBron is stating the obvious, and it still takes a little bit of courage because he knows that people are going to blast him for it. The other thing is the NBA look, the NFL has tried so hard to avoid politics, and in avoiding politics, it has brought itself into politics in this weird way where they try to silence players to some extent, and the opposite is true, whereas the NBA has really leaned in. And obviously the NBA, a more liberal league than the NFL, but it is interesting to me that the NBA, by kind of accepting that players are going to be outspoken sometimes on politics, has avoided more backlash in a way than the NFL. Bill, what's your take on this?
I mean, it's – all right, so – and it's going to come off as a put down, but it's not. Like, LeBron likes attention, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. So do I. I go to Thanksgiving dinner, and I'm trying to be the one to over talking over my whole family, but there's like 11 A-types, so it's like all of us screaming over each other, right? And I love every one of my family members.
I can confirm.
You've been to those dinners. You've been to the house my cousin, Stephanie, is living with, we're really close with her. She lived in L.A. She's living with Lori and I and the kids for like a month while she tried to like figure, you know, live in New York. And my wife just laughs because like we're just both like super intense at dinner, like talking and like talking over each other. But like, so it's not a, all would you say, not a put down. But yeah, LeBron likes attention. And I think he is attracted to being in the spotlight. And I think that has, along with his very real social justice, he's very socially conscious and conscientious and aware. Can I use a word that I'm not cool enough to use one time? It'll sound super off, but I'm gonna make fun. This is me making fun of myself. He's super woke.
I knew it.
It sounds so bad. Joey just, yeah, hipster Joey over here. Hipster Joey wearing his whatever. I think it's a combination of those things, and I think he has evolved from the days that I covered him into a guy who's not only not afraid to engage in any conversation on any topic, he welcomes it. And I think that this is something that he understood the timing of, right? He understood the timing of what's going on in the NFL and the state of quarterback play. And I think it's, you know, but it's the same reason he talked about Dennis Smith Jr. He also, like, he likes to be in the middle of what's going on. And I think that's a positive for him because he's not going to be defined just as a basketball player. He considers himself a man of the world. And the irony is, and I think the hypocrisy, is that when I covered him, a lot of the people that covered him favorably and that were sycophantic in their coverage in private would suggest he wasn't very smart, whereas I was hypercritical of him, and I recognized very early on he's brighter than most of us, right? Like, he's just a very – the guy got genetically blessed on a lot of levels, right? Brain, body, basketball skill, all of it. And I think that I think he is aware that people doubted his intellect for the very obvious reasons, I think, frankly. And I think he is going to engage in things beyond basketball because he's not going to let people define him as just a basketball player. So, all right, I want to hit a few things. I want to get into teams in the West or sort of the future of the West, but a couple other things, Reed. The Sixers released a statement on Markelle Fultz saying that his shoulder seems to be healing properly. They're going to let him engage in basketball activities. They hope it will build some strength and that in the proper amount of time, they peg it about 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks. They will reevaluate and see where he's at. We focus so much on criticizing Lonzo for his shot. We'll get there in a second. We sort of, the narrative moved away because Fultz isn't playing. Are you concerned about Markelle Fultz still? Where are you at on this?
The narrative moved away because he's not playing. His dad is not LeVar. Let's be honest about
this. Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, I'm concerned about Fultz. I'm incredibly concerned about Fultz. That shot, I've never seen anything like that in the NBA. But let's assume that he doesn't have the yips if and when that shoulder heals. And if and when he becomes the, you know, early career James Harden-like player that a lot of people thought he could be coming into this draft.
Yep.
Oh, my God, how good are the Sixers going to be in a few years? If Markelle Fultz
is
just simply healthy. Yeah. Holy cow. Like,
especially LeBron goes
there. Yes, I'm concerned. But I'm concerned more about the health than the yips. If the yips are true, then he's got a lot more to worry about.
I'm glad that the Sixers are playing well and that they're competitive, right? Like, not just their record in general, but the fact that, like, they are being competitive even in losses. And I know they collapsed in that game against, the Warriors, but that's going to happen. You're going to collapse against the Warriors. I mean, like, they're the Warriors.
Right.
I mean, look, there's 8-7. They're playing well. It takes a lot of pressure off that organization, and I think a lot of the people who don't deserve to be there because it should be Sam Hinkie. God bless, long live, all honor the process. But it does mean that they don't have to rush Fultz back, and I'm with you. I think it's a wait-and-see type of thing, but we judge our young players too soon, too harshly. The guy that's going to join us here in about 4 minutes, CJ McCollum from the Trailblazers, is one of those guys. Was injured, didn't play a lot of games, didn't play a lot of minutes. First couple of years wasn't a star. I can remember people telling me, oh, your boy Neil O'Shea, who will be on the podcast next week, by the way, got it wrong. He got it right. We are all captains of the moment. It's a process. It may be for Fultz, especially the injury. And that brings me to Lonzo Ball, Reed. It may be for Lonzo. The guy just got this. Can I just get a little pissed off for a second?
Oh, yes, please.
Like, I shouldn't disparage our fellow sort of NBA colleague writers around the country, but the same people lining up to write Lonzo's, because he got another triple-double. He's one of the youngest ever to number two. On that list is guys' names like Magic Johnson. He's the youngest ever to a single triple-double. And people lined up, including our own shop, and I love those guys, but to write stories about how this triple-double didn't count, right? Inefficient. They're not winning games. You know, he's got to shoot better, although they did win this game. I mean, like, dude, last year these same writers across multiple places threw themselves at Russ's feet, broke the tradition and history of the NBA to make the MVP someone whose team was not a contender. He was wildly inefficient, right? It was a fake triple-double. Everybody knows the guys were giving him rebounds all the time. And that triple-double means everything, but you're telling me Lonzo Ball goes 5 of 13, but adds in 16 rebounds, sorry, Joey, and 11 assists? Lonzo Ball's plus-minus was plus 29 in that game. He had by far the best plus-minus in that game. Brandon Ingram, who scored 13 points, was a straight zero. I mean, give me a break. Dude, the guy's a winner, and he doesn't get the love and the benefit of the doubt on his sort of in, 5 of 13, not very efficient. Do you know how many times I watch Russ go like 11 for 36, and people be like, oh my God, MVP. The double standard's ridiculous. The triple-doubles signify his future, and the inefficiency signifies it takes a while for the future to arrive for a lot of great players, including CJ McCollum. And I'm starting to get pissed off about all this Lonzo sucks bullshit. I think it's more about his dad than the son.
You gotta calm down before CJ calls in a few minutes, bro.
I know, I'll be nicer.
Yeah, I mean, dude, I have very little to add to that because I agree with every single thing that you just said. Lonzo's going to be a star, plain and simple. His shot, I don't think he's going to be a great shooter, but I think he will be a competent shooter. We talked to Jamal Crawford last week about this. He said he would not change his shooting form one bit. Look, Lonzo, when it comes down to it, he's a winner. He's a guy that people want to play with. He plays for one of the premier franchises, frankly, in American sports. People, NBA players are going to pay attention to that, and they're going to, I think, free agents will flock to the Lakers even more than they would have because of Lonzo Ball. And, of course, I have that bet, Bill. Next 5 years, he better be an all-star, or I'm down a few dollars.
Reed Forgrave, I believe in you. I believe in your bet. I believe the phone's ringing. So we're gonna talk about Western Conference teams that can kind of build for the future to compete with the Warriors. Maybe we'll do a whole pod on that later in the week. But I'm really excited to get to this interview. But before we get to CJ McCollum, gotta tell you about Draft. It's the fantasy draft app that is my favorite. It is Reed's favorite. Reed keeps crushing me. I got to win one of these. It lasts for just one night, and there's no management. You just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of those last-minute injuries for you. So if, like Forgrave, you keep drafting injured guys, they're going to go ahead and fix it for you. It starts every couple minutes, so you can join a draft right now. And the best part, play for cold, hard cash. Draft starts from just about $1 to much higher. There's a draft for everyone. No salary cap. It plays in a real-life snake draft. So it's just like what you do with your buddies, with your friends, in a season-long league, only it's day-to-day, not the same commitment, not the same time. And again, you can win cold, hard cash in doing it. Come and join me and Reed on Draft today. Download the app anytime. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes. Or you can do it from your computer on draft.com, whatever you want, for a limited time only. This is very cool. All new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use our promo code FBtoday. That's FBtoday as in fantasy basketball today. That's right. Play a real money game for free just using our promo code FBtoday on your first deposit on Draft. All right, as promised, we're welcoming a very special guest. And Reed, you and I spent a lot of time talking about how much respect we have for the Portland Trailblazers organization. We have Neil O'Shea on the show next week. That's a guy we've talked about finds superstars where other people do not, and we are thrilled that one of those stars joins us right now. Trailblazer CJ McCollum on the podcast. CJ, thanks for joining us.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So we want to get to a bunch of stuff. Let's start with you and start with basketball. The league obviously has been aware of your talents for a few years, but you're having by far your best season. You're shooting better than 50% on threes. I think third best in the NBA. You're having your most efficient season. Is that just a matter of, as a guy with your talent goes on, you play better basketball, or are you doing something different? Did you work on anything in the offseason to get to this level of efficiency and shooting and what we're seeing so far?
I think it's a combination of everything. Each year in the NBA, you get more comfortable understanding the system that you're playing in, understanding the different teams and schemes you're going to go against and how they're going to cover you. So I think as the years have gone on, I've gotten more comfortable with it, adjusting to the schedule, the travel, figuring out different ways to take care of my body, adding in some hot yoga, some spin classes, some soul cycle, things of that nature to kind of help me in the off season. And this season, you know, coming into it, I obviously spent a lot of time in the gym trying to figure out ways to become even more efficient. You know, coming off a season where I was pretty efficient, I wanted to shoot better from three, get to the free throw line a little bit more, figure out ways to create turnovers, you know, on the defensive end, figure out ways to be more active, and also figure out ways to help my teammates score. So just trying to put everything together. It's still very early in the season, but I'm pleased with how I performed and looking forward to continuing to get better.
CJ, you talk about hot yoga. I've also heard you talk in the past about cryotherapy and, of course, manicures, pedicures. Tell me, man, which one's best for your state of mind?
For the state of mind, I think the manicures and the pedicures
are, I love it.
Are crucial, man, because you think about the sport we play. You know, you aren't anything without your hands and feet. You know, you have to be able to run, and that's your base. You have to be able to cut, move, jump. And then from a catching, shooting, dribbling, passing standpoint, you have to have, you know, useful hands. And, you know, if your nails are extra long or they're breaking on you and causing these different types of defects, it can be brutal on your performance. But the cryo has been very helpful for me to kind of speed up the recovery process, and also added some clothing as well in the salt water tanks.
Well, I mean, tell me, how popular are manicures in the NBA?
It just depends on what team you're looking at. You know, men that care about themselves and groom themselves and don't have too much pride will go. It just depends on what team you're looking at. I got a lot of players on our team that enjoy pedicures because of the foot massages. You know, you get the foot massage, the calf massage, and things of that nature. But I don't know how many men on my team get manicures, but I would say probably 5 out of 15.
CJ, so, you know, I'm not going to judge anything because I once judged yoga, and then Bill Belichick's agent took me to some kind of hardcore yoga. I'd never done it, and I got sick in the bathroom afterwards. It was like trying to box. It was brutal. CJ, you know, one thing that we spent a lot of time talking about sort of in the wider media, and I think to the detriment of intelligent sports talk, is focusing in on young guys and their struggles, and the young guy of sort of the moment to focus on this year is Lonzo Ball, and so many people are talking about him as he might be a bust, and he's having trouble shooting. And, you know, in your case, for example, you didn't play a lot your first year. Like a lot of guys, your minutes weren't where they are now. It's a process. Do you think fans, media, maybe even players with guys who are under the microscope in a place like L.A. like Lonzo is, do you think too often we write guys off in the NBA who are young instead of understanding it often is a process to grow into whatever you're going to become?
Yeah, I think we do. In many cases, you're looking at young players being evaluated based on performance now at 19, at 20 years old, going against grown men who have been in the NBA for multiple years. It takes time to recover on these back-to-backs. You know, the travel, the media scrutiny that you're under is totally different, you know, in the NBA being in a big market versus being in college as a one-and-done athlete. So there's a lot of things players have to go through, and adversity is one of them. Understanding the game, the pace of the game, how to be an NBA player, and just in general, not just from a basketball standpoint, but from a life standpoint. You have money, you have bills, you have more responsibilities. You may be taking on the bulk of the load for the family. There's a lot of stuff that goes on behind closed doors that people aren't aware of. So I think you have to give players time to mature and kind of find themselves. And a lot of times you see, you know, some guys play a lot of minutes early, some guys don't, but you know, after a few years, you see guys kind of develop and guys change, like Jimmy Butler, Paul George, some of those guys who didn't play as much early on got time to develop, sat behind maybe an all-star or a very good player. You know, in Paul George's case, it was Danny Granger. Then he goes down. Next thing you know, he takes over the ship. And then you talked about Bill Belichick. You look at Tom Brady. He was behind Drew Bledsoe, right? And then, you know, when he did end up playing, he ended up playing well, and the rest is history.
You know, CJ, it's interesting. I'm on the show, and part of it because I know Neil, but Reed and I talk a lot about your GM and just what a remarkable job he's done. And a lot of that, obviously, is with you and with Damian, and just the ability to find guys who are not drafted with the first or second or third pick from smaller schools who are remarkable players in any sort of context, but particularly in Portland, harder place to recruit to, not with one of those top three picks in the draft. And I'm wondering for you, coming out of a small school, if there was a balance between having a chip on your shoulder and wanting to prove yourself at this level and or a learning curve just with the speed of the game or whatever it may be, and when you sort of realized at whatever point in your NBA career, day one, practice one, year two, I got this, I'm going to be able to thrive at this level.
Yeah, it definitely is a chip on your shoulder coming from a smaller school. You know, I always said it, you're envious of the bigger school players. You're jealous. You play at a small school, you're not on TV as much, you don't get the gear, your facilities aren't the same, the way you're treated isn't the same, and the way you're viewed isn't the same as some of those guys who have been down All-Americans. It's kind of like, you know, you're second fiddle to the rest of the group because you went to school longer, so they say you're older. They say, you don't have as high of a ceiling, and there's all these things against you, so you take it personal, and you want to prove that you belong, you want to prove that it doesn't matter where you come from, that if you work hard, your game can translate, you know, from any level. So I think the chip was definitely there. And then from a understanding of when I belonged, I think early on it was hard for me because I got hurt. I was coming off a fractured foot. And then the last day of training camp, I fractured my foot again. And then when I come back to the team, we're the second best team in the NBA. We end up winning 53 games my rookie year after winning 36 and being in the lottery. So that kind of changed the team dynamic and roles. You know, when you're on a good team, you don't have room for error. You can't make mistakes. You're in a playoff team and you're in the Western Conference. Every game is magnified. So, you know, being on a poor team, you're able to play through mistakes. You're not highly scrutinized because your team is not supposed to be good. So it kind of changes your role. So it took some time for me to understand the NBA game, to understand what it's like to play on a winning franchise in the NBA, being a lottery pick. It was a lot of adjusting. But I think in practice, I knew I could play at this level just going against Wesley Matthews, Dame, Nicholas Batum, all those types of players. Aaron Afala, when we had him, you know, Steve Blake, I got to go against Mo Williams, so many different players to where I was able to compete every day and learn from them and pick their brains and see their work ethic and their approach so that when, you know, you fast forward to year two in the playoffs, I'm starting against Tony Allen. You know, I score 2 points or 4 points, and then I score 6 points, then I explode with like 27 or 30 or something of that nature. And it's just like a process of going through the struggle, overcoming the struggle, and then, you know, performing at an elite level, you know, due to patience, work ethic, and trust in the staff and organization.
CJ, I'm curious, when you were at Lehigh, and any GM, whether it's Neil O'Shea or anyone else, is there in the building, are you aware of it? Do they tell you in advance? Are you playing? You're just playing and you look over and they're sitting there? I'm just curious, at a smaller school, what the awareness is or isn't when someone who can obviously draft you and change your life, like when that person is sitting in the building and you know they're scouting you.
Yeah, it's crazy. My coaching staff used to not tell me at first. They wouldn't give me the heads up about NBA teams being in the building and even practices. And then as the season progressed, as we got closer to, you know, games, they would say, hey, there's some NBA guys in the building. Or I could just tell sometimes by coaching how he was coaching. You know, maybe we're running a little bit more, or he's a little bit more intense and serious due to the fact that, you know, we're being watched by, you know, maybe GMs are in the building and things of that nature. But I just tried to approach it the same. I didn't try to do too much. I didn't try to, you know, impress anybody. I felt like being myself was good enough. There was a reason why they were coming to watch. They were attracted to something that I did. So I just tried to be myself. And it just so happens that Neil was able to catch a game live. I was actually coming off an ankle injury. And I played in the game, and then 2 games later, I ended up fracturing my foot. So it was good he was able to see me live before it was too late, before I was hurt.
That's life-changing. CJ, it sounds like the one-and-done rule is all but done. Adam Silver's talking about it. Plenty of people are out there talking about it. You returned to school for your senior year knowing that you almost certainly would have been a first-round pick coming out of your junior year. And then you broke your foot halfway through that season. A lot of people would use that as like a cautionary tale, like, if you get a chance to go to the NBA, you go to the NBA. And I guess kind of a two-part thing. One is, like, how do you feel in general about the one-and-done rule? And two, from a basketball standpoint, not from a getting your degree standpoint, what did those – going back for a senior year of college, what has that meant for your NBA career, good or bad?
Yeah, I think the first part of your question, that's a good question. The one and done rule, I think it shouldn't be universal. I don't think it's for everybody. I think there's special cases to where a guy is ready. You look at Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons was ready, although he did get hurt and end up missing his rookie year. The way he's playing now, you could tell that he's ready to be an NBA player. LeBron James, Kobe Bryant. There's some players who you see them and you look and it's like, college isn't really going to do him any good. It's not going to help him. It could hurt him because of the fact that you could get injured. But I think in some cases, players aren't ready, from a physical standpoint, obviously, from a mental standpoint, being a kid still, you haven't had time to make mistakes. You haven't had time to do dumb things with your friends, and you're not mature from a standpoint of balancing a checkbook, understanding how to pay bills. You're basically going to hire people and then kind of pulling the off jobs that you don't know how to do because you've never been put in a position to do them before. So I think there's pros and cons for being a one and done player. I don't think it's for everybody, but I think some players are capable of making the transition smoothly. For me, going back to school my senior year, it was more of a sense of, obviously getting a degree from a great university, but I felt like I had unfinished business left in college. I wanted to go to the NCAA tournament again. I wanted to be a senior and just not have responsibility of being a professional athlete. I just wanted to be a kid for one more year because I knew my life would change forever. I enjoyed the process, although I got hurt. It just taught me the understanding and appreciation of the day-to-day life. When you go through injuries and curveballs, you appreciate the small things that much more. So, not being able to walk for long periods of time, having to sit down in the shower, just being able to kind of step back and just appreciate the small things, the work ethic, the understand that the basketball game is a gift and a blessing. Everyone's not able to play it. Right? Being hurt your senior year after turning down the NBA, it'll have you questioning everything. Like, wow, I should have left. Is it still going to work out for me? I wonder what life would have been like if I would have just left and went to the NBA. So I'm glad I went through it. It made me a better person. And then refracturing my foot again my rookie year, just it was all for good cause. And now I'm appreciative of the game that much more, and I understand what hard work takes.
So your teammate, Shabazz Napier, he was someone I loved coming out of college, someone LeBron James loved, perhaps even more. But he really struggled at first, and he was one of those guys that we were talking about, that one of those guys that gets judged early. And he's become a really nice role player for this team. What is it that has changed about his game, about his mentality, and what's it meant to you and Dame having a third ball handler kind of with you in the backcourt?
Yeah, I think that this case is another case where, it's situational. He gets drafted to Miami. Obviously, LeBron was one of the people who was vocal about drafting him. Gets drafted there, and then the team dynamic changes. LeBron leaves. I think it's something a lot of the players from the team end up leaving, and it changes the franchise. And then he gets traded to Orlando. So you go from, being drafted by an organization to getting traded to a different organization. It kind of changes everything. The role changes. The expectations changed. I think they had actually had a GM and a coaching change on the team he was traded to. So it's circumstantial. A lot of things can play a role in a player's development and success early on. And he gets traded to us. And he goes into a situation where he's behind two guards who play 35, 36 minutes a night. And it's hard to find minutes on the court. It's hard to find a consistent role. But I can't say this. His work ethic has stayed the same. He's worked hard. If anything, he's just put more time in. I think I read an article saying that he hasn't taken a vacation in 6 years. He understands the importance of hard work, dedication, staying focused, and being ready. Last year, he finished strong, scoring 30 and 20-something at the end of the season. And then entering this season, he ended up hurting his hamstring. So he missed the entire preseason, played the first game, got some DMPs in between, and then got thrown back out there and has performed exceptionally well. He's been a great ball handler for us. He's been efficient, hasn't turned the ball over, making open shots, and defending the pick and rolls, and he's been a great player for us, and has really changed the dynamic of our team.
CJ, you guys have played Milwaukee already this year. If I remember correctly, you scored a bunch of points, 25 or 26. You've played New Orleans. You've played the Lakers. You brought up Ben Simmons. I think you guys play them here in the next few, a couple games from now. I'm curious. Right now, the league is obviously defined by LeBron James. I think most of us would agree he's the best player on earth right now. There are a lot of guys in that conversation that are his age, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry. There's a bunch of dudes. But I'm wondering, down the line, 3, 4, 5 years from now, if I asked you who is the future of the NBA, who defines the league 5 years from now, and you can't answer you or anyone that's on your team, if it was sort of outside of Portland, who is the guy that you think will take that mantle whenever it's time, whenever time takes over and it's time for the next era of players?
That's a great question, and I thank you for giving me the out of not having to mention anybody on my team. I mean, obviously, the easy answer is Giannis. I think even, you know, KD opened eyes by saying he could be the best player to ever play this game before the season started. But I think, you know, with his youth, him being like 21, 22 years old, you know, 7 foot with skills right now, and a guy who's able to dominate the game without shooting jump shots, you know, that shows you how far his ceiling is away. Like, he's dominating, averaging 30, essentially shooting 60%. And it's a lot of stuff is in the paint, transition, paint shots, free throws. You know, if he develops a jump shot, I mean, even if it's just a reliable 16, 17 footer, I don't see how you stop him.
Yeah, his talent is, you just said it, he's really good. I'm curious, you know, you brought up LeBron, and obviously LeBron's LeBron. It's not a secret at a minimum that it's possible he'll leave Cleveland, and we've talked a lot, CJ, on the podcast, Reed and I. We think he's going to leave, and I covered LeBron, know him a little bit, not well, but like a reporter knows a player, you know, from a distance. And I remember when Melo was sort of trying to figure out where he might be willing to be traded. I believe you brought up that if he went to Portland, you believe that you guys could be a top three team. And Portland, I love Portland, but it is not an easy city to recruit to. It's not an easy place to bring in talent. It's why it's so important that they've drafted properly with you and with Lillard. I'm curious, like, do you foresee yourself, will you make a pitch to LeBron James? Because he'll surprise people. You never know where he might go. Do you think it's worth the time and energy for you and the guys if LeBron does, in fact, decide to look around to try to sell him on why Portland might make sense?
I mean, that's a great question. I mean, being from Ohio and knowing LeBron since I was a kid, essentially playing for his AAU team, and if it came up, if it got to that point, I mean, we have each other's number. I usually see him at some point in the summer. I'm sure we could talk. But, I mean, as of right now, I'm just trying to focus on our team and what we're doing here. But if there comes a time where we're on a short list or something of that nature, I mean, you'd be a fool not to recruit arguably the best player in the NBA, arguably one of the best players to ever play, especially when you know there is some interest. There is some, West Coast interest, or at least that's what they say, around the NBA. There's some Pacific Northwest and having Nike in Oregon, I'm sure that could be a factor.
Oh, yeah.
All right, CJ, last couple questions here. You said LeBron, arguably one of the best players in the NBA, in NBA history. Let's get down to brass tacks, man. 10 years from now, when all is said and done, who do you think will be the greatest player of all time, LeBron or Jordan? And what will it take for LeBron to surpass Jordan as the GOAT?
And I think it's just tough because there's so many different generations that will judge it. You know, from a kid that was born in the 90s, you know, he's probably more so a Kobe fan than a Jordan fan because, you know, obviously Jordan's last championship was in 98. So you're 8 years old if you're born in 91, you didn't really get to see the height of Jordan. You only know, you know, classic games, videos, and the fact that his shoes are still like one of the hottest things out. So I think it just depends on when you were born, the generation you're born, and what you're watching. But it's kind of like peanut butter and jelly, as Bron had said. It's going to be barbershop talk forever. And everybody's going to have different preferences. You can compare the stats. You can compare the championships. But they're just two great players who did it differently in different eras. And obviously, LeBron being like 6'9", and who knows how many pounds, and his ability to pass and dominate the game. And then Jordan, who was, you know, 6'6", freakish build, long arms, and able to dominate a game in different ways in his era. So I think it's hard. It's going to be hard. You obviously compare the championships, you compare statistics side by side, but when it's all said and done, you could go with either one. I think you'll be able to choose either one, and it'll depend on when you were born and how you feel about, you know, championships. Is that what's more important in you, or is it winning? Is it overall winning percentage, or is it years played? Because LeBron coming out of high school will have the benefit of the doubt in the games played, because of his health and the fact that, you know, he's basically been indestructible for, you know, 15 years, and 10 years from now, he could still possibly be playing and be Tom Brady, 40 years old, dominating the NBA.
CJ, we've really enjoyed the conversation, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that you and your your backcourt partner, Damian Lillard, are one of three NBA backcourt duos right now averaging 20 points per game or more. The other is Steph and Clay and Harden and Gordon. Obviously, Gordon goes back to the bench, but with CP3 back, that certainly could continue. Where would you rank your backcourt that you are obviously half of in the NBA? Where does the Lillard, McCollum, Lillard duo rank?
I think we're very good, very competitive, and there's a lot of good guards in the NBA. There's a lot of good tandems. You got Waller, Beal, like you said before, you got James and CP. There's so many good players out there, man, and I'm sure everyone's going to say that they're number one. I just think that we're very good. It's hard for teams to come into Oregon and beat us, and you know, we feel like we can compete with the best of them.
But I got to say this, like, Reed and I love talking, and we try to do it to each other despite our lack of athleticism, but you took it to a whole nother level with Evan Fournier. Why the blowing of the kisses, and how do, like, unathletic guys like ourselves master that? What's the key? Because it looked tough. Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, man. I just felt like he disrespected me by putting his hands on me. And, obviously I'm not trying to get any fines or anything of that nature, and I told him he was sweet. You know, he's French, and I said that he was sweet, and you know, soft like those crepes you eat.
I actually had a crepe for breakfast. All right, well, that is, hey, CJ, really, I wish we could take advantage of you and talk to you for an hour. I know you're busy. Thank you for graciously making so much time. We'd love to do this again, and continued success and luck in a brutal Western Conference. We love watching you play, and we loved having you on the show.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yeah, happy Thanks, holidays. CJ. Wow, that was all right. That was really, really great. CJ McCollum, incredibly funny and a vicious, brutal, pastry food-styled, inspired takedown of Evan Fournier. On behalf of Reed Forgrave, I am Bill Ryder. The show is The Flagrant 2. We appreciate your listening. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes. You can rate and review favorably. You can point out on Twitter that Reed is the one that carries it. I know, it's fine. At Reed Forgrave, at Sports Writer, that's sports and my last name, R-E-I-T-E-R. You can listen on Stitcher. You can listen on SoundCloud, and we'll often play some of the clips like we will here soon on my national radio show, Shameless Plug, nothing to do with this podcast. All right, thank you for listening to The Flagrant 2 with Bill Ryder and Reed Forgrave. Thanks to CJ McCollum for joining us. We will be back and talk to you guys again very, very soon. Appreciate you listening.